Well, don't worry, Michelle. I'll continue to correct you, even when
Thank
you're
you.
right. But educable just sounds like a dumb word. It sounds like, that can't be a word, frickin' educable. Educatable. It's missing
Well,
an eight in the middle.
it was used a lot in the homeschool community, and so
Like, damn, girl, you're educable.
not exactly, but kind of close.
So, Michelle, I've had a raft of friends telling me they liked True Detective season two. Way more than smart people. I mean, people that are like, I'm like, come on, you're kidding, right? And their argument is that, well, if it wasn't for season one, season two would look really good. I'm like, well, but so what? There was a season one. Season one was really good, borderline great. And so season two paled in comparison. That means it's not great. It's not as good. It's a poor argument, I think.
Yeah, I'm not going to change my opinion on season two. I know you and I were pretty harsh about it, and I've thought about it, and I've actually read some of the stuff where people really liked season two and felt like we just weren't in touch for not liking it, that we, I don't know, maybe weren't smart enough to get it or something, but I feel like I got it, and I feel like it got better as it went on, but I thought it was tedious. And I'm not going to change my mind on that. I agree with you.
All right, did you get into any Mr. Robot?
No, I haven't yet. No, you didn't tell me about it till like midnight last night.
I
No,
know.
I haven't finished.
I've heard people tell me that was really good, so I started watch. I haven't even really finished the first episode.
Oh, really?
So, but it's really good. It's really good. It zeroes in on totally topical things in a really smart way, and it's this lonely kind of self. It's just this lonely computer genius guy who hacks into computers and learns all these things about people, and it's just really good. You got to watch it. If you watch a little of it, you'll get the flavor of it right away, and you'll know if you like it or not.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. When I looked it up after you mentioned it, I read, I think this was the series, that they postponed the last episode or something because of the tragedy that happened in Virginia.
Yeah, the two news people that got killed on air.
Yeah,
So
some.
that's how zeroed in it is to society.
That's wild. Yeah, that's crazy. So that makes me, want to see what you were talking about specifically.
That probably, you're right. That's in a really kind of twisted way is going to make it super popular, 'cause that's the season, that's the ending episode, season
That's
ending episode.
crazy. That
I
was
mean, if you
crazy.
were a marketer, you couldn't dream of a more powerful way to end your series or your season.
Yeah, but I've heard of that also not being good. Like it hits too close to home in other life situations where stuff like that, where tragedies have happened and scenes have already been shot and they've had to go back and even redo them and stuff. Of course, I don't know that that's going to happen with this, but it'll be interesting to see how that plays
I don't think
out.
so. I think they're supposed to air it 1 week later, which
Oh,
I don't
okay.
even know what day that is. But
I
the
don't know.
cool thing about Mr. Robot, it's a USA original content. So it's now these networks are making their own shows. They're not just sitting there as providers to broadcast other people's content. They're creating their own content, like the AMCs now and the Netflixes and HBOs.
Isn't that great?
So USA, you wouldn't even think USA. Wow, they're just another channel, but. That, yeah, and such a good show. I mean, it's not just like a filler.
Yeah, because I was just thinking the other day, we have The Affair coming up and we have Fargo coming up. Both come up in October. One starts the beginning and one starts the middle. I can't remember which one, but we're not doing anything new. And I was just thinking, I'm not even watching anything new. Everything, and of course, True Detective was new because it's an anthology and a different story, but I was kind of looking for something new and something different.
There was an advertisement on this first episode of Mr. Robot for a show. I don't know if it's started yet, because this episode must have aired months ago, Mr. Robot's first episode, or at least weeks ago, 10 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And it's about this show where this doctor saves a kid on the street in a gangland shooting, and then he becomes involved in the gang dispute. I don't even know the name. It starts with a C. Conflict or something. I'll have to find it. But that looks really interesting. And it must be another USA original production.
But is that it was a series or a movie?
I think it was a 2-hour special, so I don't know if it became into a series or what. I'll go back and rewatch the commercials and figure it out and find it.
Okay. Yeah.
So do you have any other world any other web 3.0 world news, Michelle? Your studio, how's your studio coming?
The studio is, I'm a little frustrated. Julia had some emergency dental work that had to be done, and so that was costly, and a couple other things, some plumbing issues, and so it'll be a little while. So, I don't know.
All right. Well, let's halt and catch fire.
Okay.
This is episode 5, 105, Adventure on Halt and Catch Fire. Davi Waller was the director, and Davi Waller was a director on a lot of good shows, Michelle. Mad Men?
That's a good show.
What else? I think The Walking Dead.
Oh, wow.
Look here. Maybe I'm thinking of the other one. Desperate Housewives.
I used to love that show years ago.
Maybe just Mad Men. Maybe it was the other one I'm thinking of. Yeah, she was a writer. Maybe she's the writer. I don't know. I should probably correct myself. She was the writer on Mad Men. I was thinking of maybe somebody else for The Walking Dead and Better Call Saul and Breaking Bad. Anyway, she was a writer on Mad Men, which is pretty good resume filler to have for your resume.
Yeah, absolutely.
But she was the writer of this episode 5, 105, Adventure on Halt and Catch Fire. What did you think of Halt and Catch Fire's 105?
I liked it. It showed, well, first of all, it told us the year. We know the exact year. That was 1983 because they talk about the car, the Datsun. And it's just like, I just think this whole series is a great series, and this episode didn't disappoint at all. I mean, I thought it was good or better, maybe, even.
Than
the ones that we've seen so far up until this point.
Yeah, I think this is where they start getting their feet under them, this 105, 6, 7, towards the end here.
Mm-hmm.
I started to really like it here. I mean, this is where you start to really get drawn into this story. It's not just watching interesting people. Like Joe McMillan is an interesting character to watch, but you start getting really drawn into their story now. You start pulling for people and maybe rooting against other people and all that. And I don't know. It's just compelling at this point.
Yeah, I think the character development that they've done up until this point has really paid off in this episode.
So the name of the episode, Adventure, is from the colossal cave adventure game that they play, that the coders all like to play.
Yep.
And the network had a real game that you could go on and play on their website, Colossal Cave Adventure.
Oh, really?
On the Halt and Catch Fire website.
Wow.
Yeah, I haven't done it. I'm not really a gamer, but that's pretty cool. You could go in and play that game. And we'll see some interesting things about that game that kind of steer the story towards the personalization of the computers and kind of the strength of Cameron and the way other people push back against her. I don't know. It's a pretty interesting way to introduce that.
Yeah.
But it starts out – I think I have a speed recap here somewhere. Let me take a quick look. Cameron goes on a business trip. Joe hires a team while she's away. And one of the things Gordon has to do to make all these requirements of size and speed and price happen is get a super, super new crystal display. So he gets that. He gets a line on that. They figure out it's way too expensive, so they have to find some Japanese guys to make it for them. They have an interesting dinner with those guys. Cameron comes back and sees all these programmers, and that's actually how she meets these wacky yo-yos and Levs, and they are part of this new programmer team.
Yep.
We see Gordon act really drunkenly stupid with the Japanese culture and just kind of craps all over them and doesn't even know what he's doing. We meet a little bit more, get a little bit more intimate with Donna's parents and see how that family works and how Gordon isn't even welcome into the house at certain points. When he's like at the doorstep, they keep him outside the house. And then, like we said, Cameron's intuitive thought about how things that are mechanical, this metal behind the metal or close to the metal, you can make metal personal, and that's kind of what we see today with things that are very personal. You can, like, you give your phone to somebody, it's like giving away your pathway into your life.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a big deal to hand somebody your cell phone, even just for a little bit. It's, you're right.
So Cameron rises up from that, being away, getting people hired under her or alongside of her, and then just takes charge and fires her own boss, and Joe puts her in charge, and there she is, kind of now the director. And so she's lined up now for these next few episodes to introduce this whole adding personality to metal, which was kind of cool. But it starts out with Joe and Cameron getting up in the morning, and Joe's got the cool clothing layout. This the first time we see this is this episode, I think, right? Because we see it again pretty soon. We see it a couple times, but he's got the designer suits and ties and everything all slick and laid out, and you can tell it's really important for him to have his appearance look just right.
It's very 80s-esque. All of the 80s shows seem to have that. American Psycho, I hope that was 80s, but that kind of,
yeah,
genre,
Wall Street,
that,
yeah, all, yeah, that stuff. So Joe's kind of in his shower in wherever they are, Dallas, and Cameron's in the Cincinnati hotel room where Joe has sent her to be away while he can pull all these shenanigans. That trip she's on, I think, is just a get her out of town for a couple days trip. Doesn't seem like she's doing very much important there.
No.
Going to a supplier and talking up some stuff. But when Cameron wakes up, she's happy. And when Joe wakes up, he's very stressed and pained because he's just, if you'll remember from last episode, he's just taken this beating,
yeah,
from the police. And Joe sees the article about Cardiff. So his plan to get this writer to look their direction actually worked. He wrote the article.
Yep.
So Joe busts out the bat to swing and stretch out and kind of get his muscles loosened up from this beating he took. But, you know, Michelle, I think this really works. I've done this before where if you're just stiff and sore, the best thing you can do is move, even if it hurts like hell.
Right, yeah. Well, yeah, we also find out that they use that a lot. His dad talks about swinging the bat. I forget exactly how he says it, but he goes about how he told him to
swing for the fences.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah, the whole bat thing is very colloquial, very, very profound in storytelling. Like, you gotta get up to bat, get in the batter's box, swing for the fences, don't strike out. You know, you never hit a home run 100% of the time you're not in the batter's box. All that stuff about just trying. And Joe is always trying these wacky, crazy, you know, miraculous types of deals.
Yep.
And his dad taught him this, so he uses this bat to, like, resolve this pain that he's in. The pain doesn't keep him from swinging the bat, I guess, is interesting.
It is.
So I don't know, we were talking a little bit about me playing softball, and you get hurt a lot when you're 40, 50 years old. And I'm not too sad when I get hurt, because it kind of makes me feel like, okay, I'm hurt, but it can, you know, you twist your ankle or you slide and you hurt your shin or something. It kind of makes you feel glad to be alive. Because as you recover from that pain, it makes you think like, wow, my body's pretty miraculous.
Yeah, it's kind of like being sore after you've worked out really good or something like that. It's a good feeling. There's something that feels really good about it.
Yeah, and I think I saw that in Joe here. He was kind of like, well, fuck you, world. You can't keep me down with a little bit of pain. I'm going to overcome it. You know, and then he does it, he like magnifies it, he ones up it by the sledgehammer on the car. This is the same episode where he does that.
Yeah.
Sledgehammer's a lot heavier than the bat, and he really goes to town on this car, like not too much later than this same day when he's hurt his ribs. So, I don't know, I like the whole bat analogy. Mm-hmm. I liked it a lot. So, other people see this article too. Michelle Gordon and Donna see it at their house. And we find out it's her dad's birthday. Yeah. Are they at her parents' house maybe? Because why are her parents at their house? Somehow they're with...
No, it's their house. She's cooking them breakfast. I guess they just came over for breakfast or something.
They gave the girls some tiny TV wristwatches or TV. These little LCD screens that they're going to need for their computer.
Right.
Those are pretty cool. But there's no birthday golf for Gordon. He's invited to come and celebrate with father-in-law, but he doesn't have time or doesn't want to, and kind of declines to the disappointment of the father. And he's like, I thought I'd at least get you to come play golf with me on my birthday. But he declines at first here. He's going to end up changing his mind, but not because he loves his father-in-law, certainly.
Yeah, right.
All right, and we go back to Cardiff, and Boz is pitching the computer now to the retail buyers and how the portable is better than IBM. You won't hurt your back lugging it around. Boz is making all these corn dog corny, you know, when you run off with your mistress, you don't need to be lugging a big old suitcase or whatever he said. I can't even remember.
He's really bad at that. It's like he's telling this and he is just, it's bad. It's not a good pitch at all. But luckily, Joe's standing in there.
Joe sees it and overhears it, but declines to help for a second. I mean, he must know that Boz has been behind this beating that he just took the night before. But then he does turn on his charm, and he kicks ass. This is his wheelhouse, this talking to people about concept and market and products and the viability to consumers and how retailers can position this. It's just really, really cool to watch him talk to these buyers. So he makes this, he presents it this way, that there's three shelves. Your top shelf is number one is IBM. Then on the second tier of shelving is your branded product, your whatever your company's name is that's been rebranded with your name. And then the bottom shelf, number three, is the schmucks, the third rate, cheapest, easiest to get. And I think this is what they've been sent to Cardiff to research. This Cardiff could be a schmucky third rate product. Fill out a product line for Christmas or whatever. This is the low-end, low-rate thing on the third shelf. But Joe swaps that whole thing around. He flips that whole concept and says, you know, screw that. Cardiff's top shelf. Cardiff is shelf number one. And pretty soon IBM will be cloning us because we've made such vast improvements to their ideas that we've come even past them. We're better than IBM now. Pretty cool. Pretty cool. Cool little presentation he does there in what, 1 minute? It's like really short.
Yeah, and he absolutely wins them over. As soon as he starts talking, they're all engaged and everything. Whereas when Boz was talking, it was, they had some questions and Boz wasn't even able to answer the kind of technical aspect of it. So he came in and did so much more than that.
Yeah, Joe is talking about clocking speeds and how it'll blow IBM away this way and that way. But then he puts on the sizzle on top of the – he knows the steak. Like he knows the guts of his technical presentation, but he puts the sizzle on it too. He's really, really interesting to watch. I don't know. I think people in business must really like watching this guy in his scenes. However you may dislike him as a person, he's just fascinating to watch as a business person.
Yeah, he is.
So Cameron comes back now and sees all the new engineers, and they're discussing the name, naming the BIOS, and they want to use the word Khan from, what, Star Trek?
Is that where it's
Khan,
from?
Khan, the Wrath of Khan, maybe not Star Trek, but maybe the Wrath of Khan. Was it the Wrath of Khan, a Star Trek sequel?
You're asking the wrong person. I don't know.
Well, she wants to use the word Lovelace, and they mistake it for Linda Lovelace, the deep throat movie star. But it's apparently a computer woman who invented something in computer. I don't even know who she is, really. But
yeah, Ada Lovelace, the first computer programmer ever.
Okay.
Yeah.
So she's kind of disgusted that they think Love. But Lovelace would not be a good name for it because everyone would think it's Linda Lovelace. I don't know. I don't.
But she says she gets to name it because she wrote it. So.
Well, this is another episode, Michelle, where some people are right and the other side is right too. And I think she's kind of right. She does deserve a say in what the name is, but she's got bad marketing tendencies. And Lovelace would not have been a good name. It would have been mistaken.
Yeah, and she's right about how to run the business, too. She's got it, but I don't know. I feel like Cameron doesn't do anything. She doesn't do well until her hand's forced, ever. And we've seen a whole lot more of this than this episode 5, which is all we're talking about. But she doesn't do anything until her hand is forced to do it. And when Joe hired the people to come into the office to essentially run this software management stuff, that's when she took the initiative.
Well, that's true of a lot of people. And that's actually a management style of some managers, like put people totally under the gun. You know, you have 2 hours to get me this report, even though it's a 12-hour report. And it's impossible to do it, but that pressure cooker situation gives them, you know, that's how diamonds are formed, right? Heat and pressure. So they turn on the guts of the computer for the first time. Gordon turns it on, and the red light switches to green, so it passes. So the system seems to be working, and they all celebrate, but Joe shuts them down. He reminds them, okay, there's no screen yet. It's not ready. This is a giant, huge mess of parts that wouldn't fit in a duffel bag or whatever. It's not quite the portable masterpiece yet that we're trying to create. And so he's kind of right about that. I mean, they should celebrate a little, but Joe's kind of right. You can't celebrate till you're at the finish line, really.
Right. But they're kind of joking about it. The guys in the room are. They kind of joke back and forth about the computer and stuff because they feel proud of what they've done. But Gordon, I think, sees the seriousness of it.
I think Gordon gets awakened by Joe's seriousness here a little bit. So I really like Joe in this episode. I like him a lot. I mean, he's still my favorite character in this whole thing, but I really like him in this episode. We see Donna now get railed at by her boss, Hunt, at Texas Instruments. Is that her company?
Yes.
But he's wrong because she's written the correct report. He's mixed it up. He's put it on the wrong page or looked at the wrong page or something. So she's doing her job correctly. He's just messed up reading it in the wrong order.
Yeah. I think she gave him 2 reports, maybe at one time or something, and it just wasn't, and he didn't see that second report in there. It's like she had even went above and beyond or something, and so
yeah,
he didn't know.
So this whole series jump cuts back and forth a million times. So we go right back to Gordon and his team. They're talking about the technical problems now of the speed, the heat, the size, all these things. You can't really have all these things seamlessly. You can't have fast speed, low heat, and small size. You gotta figure some problems out here to make those 3 things happen. But they figure out that the answer is to swap the cathode ray tube display for this liquid crystal display. So the little watches the girls got from Grandpa, Gordon's father-in-law, is seemingly the answer because they don't use as much energy. They're smaller. They're really kind of an elegant little answer to their problem. So while Cameron does get back to meet these new engineers, among those engineers are, like we said, Lev and Kenneth, or Yo-Yo. And Yo-Yo charms her right away. They start playing games, and he sees that she is playing a certain game simply by the way she's using keystrokes.
Yeah, the keystrokes. And of course, he's turning up a can of canned cheese, so what's not charming about that?
Yeah, cheese whiz, right? Squirting it in his mouth.
Right in the mouth. We've all done that. Admit it. We've all done it.
I might have tried it once. I wasn't a fan of it. So her meeting the team this team was forced upon her. And of course this, as we know, will become major components of her company soon to be company. So there are good things in all these rain clouds. There's some good silver linings for people.
Except for the manager, Steve, that they brought in, that Joe and Gordon, or Joe, I guess, has brought in.
Yeah, she gets caught playing a game, and she's supposed to be working on some computer printer driver or something. Are you playing a game? This guy was a horrible manager, though. This guy was the, unlike, I'm going to call Joe the premier excellence of manager in this episode. I'll explain it a little bit more clearly when we get to it. But this guy was the anti-manager. He was the nitpicking over your shoulder micromanager manager. Anyway, so that was an interesting introduction to that. So Gordon does have to play golf now because he needs to get a line on these LCD screens. He's figured out this is a pretty cool solution, and I can't just get the Japanese to listen to me. I need father-in-law to help me. And the best way to do that is to go right to the golf course and say, hey, I need a meeting. Can you introduce me? And we get a hint while he's talking to the father-in-law. The last time he asked me for help, this happened. And it was the whole symphonic thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of a disaster. I guess they gave him the money and they probably somehow looked bad because Gordon looked bad because it's his little baby girl that he's married to and introducing her to this failed company and borrowed money and bad idea. And he really gets kind of shot down for symphonic.
Yeah, but can we just talk about him for just a second? Because the way he goes about asking for this is not confident building. I mean, he has no confidence in what he has confidence in what he knows, but his delivery is so bad. It's so weak.
Well, he should have played golf. He should have sacrificed his day. To a like Joe does with the Japanese, he sacrifices that whole dinner to posturing for the right time to say the right thing and ask the right question. It's you know, it's foreplay. It's like a relationship. It's communication. Gordon, you're right. You're exactly right. Gordon zooms in with an emergency on the putting green while they're trying to warm up, interrupts everybody, blurts out that he has this need. He's not even going to stick around to play golf. He's just a buffoon.
Yes. Yes, that's the best way to put it. That's right. It's just such a hard thing to watch, especially coming off the heels of Joe's whole conversation with the investors. It just is horrible. It's a horrible thing to watch, and you know, if that had been Joe, he would have gotten the father-in-law to ask him to introduce. You know, I mean, he just has a way about him to...
Oh, Joe would have spent the whole day on the golf course with all those people, and he would have schmoozed the father-in-law for 6 hours. He wouldn't have rushed in and rushed out and dropped a bomb, you know.
Absolutely.
I don't know. You got to pave the road for where you got to get to sometimes, and it takes doing things that aren't necessarily the immediate need that you have. You have to kind of set the table.
Yes.
Now, we see that. We see that with the Japanese. We see that with Gordon. I really liked, and the presentation to the retail buyers, I just really liked how they represented presentations in this episode.
I agree.
So the father-in-law, what's the father-in-law's name? I keep forgetting his name.
I can't remember. I'll look it up.
He does tell Gordon, you can't just bluster in there. You can't just ask them if I give you a name. You can't call them. It means a face-to-face. Japanese people meet face-to-face, and that's how they do business.
Right.
So that happened. So Joe then finds out from the main secretary, Debbie, that his father's been trying to meet him. He's passing through town and wants to meet him. Joe agrees to meet his father, but then kind of peeks in where they're supposed to meet and doesn't go through with it. What did you think about that?
I don't know. I didn't understand why he did that. Why would he bother going down there and actually looking through the window but not going any farther?
Yeah, it was very mysterious. He lets the father think he's going to meet him instead of just saying, nah, I'm out of town, or no, I'm too busy. It's like he wasn't sure, and then he thought about it along the way and convinced himself, I don't really want to meet him. Changed his mind somehow.
Yeah, what was that, though? What do you think that was? Because I never did get a reason behind that.
Yeah, I don't know. I still don't know after rewatching it. You know, I've seen this probably two or three times and I still don't know.
Yeah, okay.
So he peeks in there, sees him in the bar, in the meeting room where they're supposed to meet, and just turns around and doesn't go in and passes. Then he goes back to the office and finds out that Gordon has set up the Izoku meeting with the Japanese people without him. And tells him to cancel, reset. You're not doing this. He knows Gordon going into a meeting like this is like a lamb to a slaughter.
Well, yeah, because he's seen him before run his mouth and ruin things. Remember when he first, in episode, I think, one, when he first meets him and he's having dinner with somebody or drinks with somebody and he ruins everything they're talking about. He's what he's known for. And Joe's seen it actually in action before.
Yeah, also, doesn't Gordon set the meeting for like the Blue Diamond sushi house or something stupid that he thinks of Japanese guys will like? And
yeah,
Joe's like, no way, dude, they want steak and whiskey, and he knows it. He just sets them up. I mean, he sets it up perfectly. I don't know, I really like that part too, so I'm hammering that point overly home. But back at Cardiff, Cameron and Yo-Yo are totally hitting it off. He shows her that the printer can print more than text, which is cool. Figures arranged in a sequence that made what was the smile?
Smiley face, yeah.
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah.
And Mr. Manager shows up again and bothers her again, and very, very strategically tells her not to get her panties in a wad, which you can't say that to a person as a manager, even if you're right that she's slacking off and overly angry and disruptive. You can't tell somebody that.
No, you can't say anything to a female that you couldn't say to a male.
Right. So Cameron complains to Joe, but he shuts her down. I kind of oddly found myself agreeing with Joe here. She's right. She can't be treated and talked to like that, but he's right too. She has to be more corporate. She can't just bluster around and play games during the day and tell her manager, even if he's a shitty manager, you know, fuck off or get the hell away from me.
Yeah, but I kind of wondered if that wasn't even a form of Joe's manipulation of her, because Joe knows her and he knows she's not going to work well under this guy. And why would Joe even hire this guy to be there? This is not somebody who's up to Joe's caliber of employee. It was just so weird. I mean, Joe vetted everybody, and then suddenly he's got this doofus that comes in there and says, you know, check it off the board when you've got... I mean, it's just, I don't know. It was just...
Check it off the board when you log out of your computer. Yeah, he was just a micromanager. I think Joe was setting up the chess pieces to forge the steel the way that he needed it to come out.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was saying. I think he had an ulterior motive to even having that there. So he was right in that Cameron has to function within the framework of the company, but I think there was more to it than that. I think he was wanting Cameron to break out of and show what she was really made of, and that was his way of pushing her.
Break out of, or break and totally break and fall to the ground and leave. Yeah, he was forcing the issue. And I mean, he's done it before, and it's not unwise to think that's exactly what he's doing here.
Yeah.
So this is the other thing about this episode, Michelle, that this is where we get really total confirmation that Cameron gets through her stifling, stymied creativity by having sex. And she goes and flirts with Joe now in the office, and he shuts it down. But I don't think she's trying to get through a breakthrough here. She's trying to manipulate him a little bit. Like, come on, you know, you're my sexy friend, not just my coworker. But he shuts it down. But we do later on get this confirmation that Cameron gets through her breaks through her her what do you call it when you can't think, like I can't think right now. her writer's block with sex. So we go to this Izoku meeting now, and Gordon gets drunk right away. Good, that's just gonna turn out good, right? Gordon being drunk. And also, Gordon is touchy, which is a shitty thing to do, even if you're friendly and you're talking to people that don't normally get put off by that. But it's just not good to touch people that you don't know, right?
Absolutely.
Especially business people. But it's even third, it's another level of weird to these Japanese people who are very straight-laced and very formal. And he's touching them, and it's just, he's doing everything wrong.
Everything.
But Joe's been to Tokyo 9 times, so he knows the social protocol. of the Japanese.
Yeah. But he does. I mean, he's got it going on. Joe knows what he's doing, but Joe doesn't go into a situation where he doesn't know what he's doing, I don't think.
It's funny, though, that they kind of justify Joe's expertise with Japanese because he's been to Tokyo 9 times.
Right.
It's kind of, that's, I don't know if that was supposed to be funny, but it came across as kind of funny. I'll handle this. I've been to Tokyo 9 times. And it's just funny. So Cameron goes to the apartment to get – she's mad now because she's gotten usurped with all these engineers and Joe turning her down for sex. And she's cleaning out the apartment. I guess she's going to move out. And when she gets there, she sees Joe's dad, Joe Sr.
Yep.
And they talk about the bat now, this bat, how he gave Joe the bat, told him to swing for the fences. And he mistakes her as being Joe's girlfriend. And – she turns that around and says, I'm not his girlfriend. And then, like, what the hell are you doing here? And he says, well, you can get anywhere if you appear to be where you belong. Which is kind of what Joe did, right? He's bluffing his way into all these situations and appearing.
It's exactly what Joe did. It's exactly how he got Cardiff to do this whole thing. Just bluffing his way in.
So there we see that tree and the acorn, right? Joe and his dad are pretty much carbon copies of each other.
Yep.
So Joe Sr. tells Cameron that the IBM boys were really impressed with her when they went back to New York. Do you think they were bragging on her and everything? Do you think that was really true?
Yes.
Or was he schmoozing her?
Well, I think he's definitely a schmoozer, but they were talking about her, and they were talking about what she did. Now, whether they put it in a positive or a negative light, does it really matter? Because he knew her, so that's enough.
I think you're right. I think the way that they proved that he really knew her, because he says her last name, Cameron
yep.
Howe,
mm-hmm.
like he knew her full name. So he couldn't have just been like, oh, yeah, you're the one that they really, really liked back when they came. Like, he knew her. So I think that is true, which is kind of telling again about Cameron. She's being pretty much fortified in this episode that she's – she belongs in this really important developmental role as like a manager of this software. And she's not easily dismissed. She's really a force in the show.
Yeah.
All right, so back to the dinner. Gordon's touchy-feely with these guys and just very, very poor with his other socializing. Joe takes over at one point and starts negotiating some sort of a deal about pricing. Like pricing, we'll pay a lower price up front, but we'll cover you on the back end when we make more money and move more product. And then they kind of celebrate and drink shots to that. So Joe knows exactly what to do from square one to the middle to the end. Like, he knows the introduction part. He knows the deal making part. He knows how to negotiate the pricing. He knows how to celebrate the close. If you remember back in season one, Gordon fucked up the close on one of the pitches Joe was giving.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's actually what I was talking about earlier. And Joe told him then, remember, he was very aggressive with him and told him out in the parking lot, you don't ever talk when, you know, he's talking like that. But you do see Gordon kind of pause right there. You know Gordon wants to say something, but he doesn't. So he catches himself, and I was kind of rooting for Gordon at that point. I thought, okay, Gordon's learned something, and he's not going to, you know, screw this up. Right.
Yeah, so Joe's techniques here are teaching – people are learning in his class of life. Cameron's learning. Gordon's learning. You know, who knows who else? Bosworth maybe learning a little bit.
Yeah.
We actually go back to Cardiff now, and everybody's playing games, including Bosworth. And he needs everybody to stop and rush into his office and help him get out of a cave that he's managed to get stuck in the game, in the adventure game.
Yeah, and so he was even into it and excited about it. So that said something about it.
So if we didn't need anything else from Gordon, he goes into the bathroom and pees next to the Japanese guy and insults his father-in-law and talks to the guy while he's peeing. Now, Michelle, have you ever talked to anyone while you're in a bathroom peeing?
Well, I mean, if you go to the bathroom with a girlfriend, you might say something, but...
Well, boys don't go to the bathroom together, and they don't go to the bathroom to talk while they're peeing. It's just not a thing guys do. And this Japanese guy looks over at Gordon, like, dude, are you fucking kidding me? He can't get out of there fast enough.
Yeah, that was real. Well, then plus that's where Gordon just go. And plus what he's saying. I mean, you know, it's not just that he's talking, but he's talking down his father-in-law.
Right, family and heritage. And he's also drunkenly just repeating things. He's just zoned out. He's just not a good presenter.
No, and the Japanese guy, you can tell he's very upset at what he's hearing and stuff, and Gordon just keeps talking. He's not even paying attention to his body language or anything.
Well, he's holding his penis and peeing.
Well.
All right, so they're really carving pretty interesting story out here. They are jumping right back and forth. So Joe Sr. now and Cameron are talking about her father. And I guess her father was a helicopter technician? Helicopter maintenance guy?
Yeah, it was something like that, yeah.
Helicopter mechanic. And she finds out that Joe's dad, Joe Sr., worked on the early computer with Grace Hopper, who is some inventor woman, that calculated artillery. I can guarantee you is not a word.
I don't know.
Artillery fire. Angles of artillery fire. And she wrote some program that helped calculate that.
Well, he's also dropping other names, too. Did you notice? He's dropping Bill Gates and he even brings up Ada Lovelace.
Again. Yeah, without knowing that she had probably just talked about him.
Of course not. Yeah.
So she's impressed with him. He's a pioneer. He's a computer pioneer essentially. She's impressed with him up till now at least. And then Joe, along the way of this conversation, finds out that her father is dead, probably in the war. He got killed while she was about 10 years old. Which is kind of an interesting thing to know once we see a little bit later what interactions Cameron has had with her father. And this kind of is touching for her. She shuts it down right away because it's pretty emotional for her to think of her father. And he picks up on that like, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't realize he probably didn't make it out of Vietnam and he was important to you. So out in the parking lot of the restaurant, the Japanese have picked up the check, Michelle, and that means goodbye to you. It means fuck you. We're not interested in working with you. If we pick up the check, that's our severance from you.
Okay, did you know that, or is that something?
No, actually, I didn't know that.
Okay.
You'd think it's the opposite. You'd think it's the courteous, polite thing, like, oh, we like you. We're going to buy you dinner. But I guess it's tying off all the... They're not obliged anymore. They're severing
things. Right, right, right. They don't owe you anything.
So Gordon doesn't know that either, and Joe clears that up for him. And next, Gordon calls Donna and drunkenly complains. Gordon is a frickin' mess, man. Gordon is so unlikable at this point. I didn't like Gordon at all at this point. He's just – nobody wants to be around him, including Donna, when he calls her. She fakes the little alarm thing to go off, like, oh, I got to get to whatever, the oven. She ditches his call because he's just like a mess.
Yes.
Did you think Gordon was ever going to recover from this point?
No. And I don't want to say anything else because I don't want to spoil, but no. No, I didn't.
Well, this is a recap podcast, so.
I know, but still, I mean, he's horrible.
Were you going to say that you don't think he ever did recover from this?
I don't think he ever did recover, and I don't think he ever will recover from where they left us off. I just don't have a lot of faith in Gordon.
Yeah.
In his technical know-how, I think the guy's a genius, but he's certainly... like, not a visionary. He's not. And he just has no social skills at all.
He does rise up every now and then. He pokes his head up above the glass ceiling that he's formed for himself, and he does shine a little bit, but he always trips it up. He always blows it.
It's only long enough to give you a little bit of hope for him and then dash him again, though.
Yeah. So Hunt calls, Donna's boss calls, and flirtily talks to her and gives her this recipe for peach pie that his grandmother had about adding vodka to it. Would this work, Michelle? Can you add vodka in place of water and make the crust better?
I've never heard it before. I don't know.
It's very flirty, though, and I think that's the point.
Well, yeah, he even says, if you have any extra, you could bring me some. And
yeah, I just said how much I dislike Gordon. I really, really dislike this guy, Hunt. He hasn't done anything wrong yet, and he's pretty soon about to do stuff that seems almost honorable. Like, he shuts the door on Donna at the room when they could have fooled around. But he's disturbingly creepy to me.
I don't know. I don't get that much of a vibe about him. Not about him being creepy. I feel, well, yeah, he is. But I feel like he's being portrayed as someone who has an internal struggle over the lines that he doesn't know if he wants to cross or not. Plus, I think all of these different relationships with Donna, and we'll see it in the next episode hugely, is contrasting the horrible relationship she has with Gordon for the most point.
Right.
So I think they're necessary to show us, kind of give us a little relief for Donna to show us.
It's almost a schematic. It's almost like the schematic or the recipe, maybe the recipe for how marriages fail. Like, shitty communication. The only time you ever want to talk to me is if you're drunk and you have a problem, and it's all you, like Gordon's doing to Donna. So she shuts it down and she's going to reach out to somebody else. It's like the recipe for disaster for their marriage.
Yes.
But still, Hunt creeps me out. He has this color of authority thing he uses over Donna. Like, I'm your boss. You got to do this. Oh, I already did that, and it's already in there, and it's already a killer report. Like, oh, yeah, okay, well, next time put the pages in the right order. He's just like using his power over her in a way that I don't like.
Yeah, I mean, I can definitely see that. I just think that he's having an internal struggle with how to behave with her.
I still want to know when he cracks and when he realizes this is something I can steal from these people. And it may have been last episode. It may be this episode. But we get another hint about it, where it could be at this episode a little bit later coming up. And now Gordon goes from this call right to the house where he gets stuck on the doorstep, the father-in-law's house. And mom-in-law won't even let him in. She just calls back over her shoulder, Gordon's here. Can you come out and talk to him? She won't even let him in the house. That's not a good in-law sign, Michelle.
It's not, but he's there and he's drunk and it's not, he's they've got company and I don't know.
So he blew the deal with the Japanese. This is right after the dinner. Blew the deal, he's drunk, and he's gonna beg for help now. Just like he had an emergency on the golf course that morning, he needed help. Now he's begging for help because he blew it. He's just such a freaking loser. I'm surprised they didn't slam the door on the guy or say, sit down, we're going to call you a cab, and you're going home. I don't know. He's just digging this hole.
Yeah.
Which I guess we'll see soon. Cameron tells Joe Sr. now that Joe was wrong about you. But Joe Sr.'s playing her all along, I think, right? This whole thing, he's like, he knows that this is an angle that he can use to leverage Joe.
Yeah, I'm still not sure what he wants with Joe. Do you think he wants Joe to go back to IBM? Do you think his intentions are pure in any way? Because I just can't tell.
Or he wants Joe, or IBM sent him there like an assassin to shut down the Cardiff plan for this. You know, I think Cardiff really does have magic in a bottle here with this little computer they're making.
Sure.
And I think IBM realizes it. That's why they're going through all these machinations of giving their dealers super pricing and losing money to kill off Cardiff's customers. I wouldn't be surprised if they had sent Joe Sr. down there as an assassin to find out what he can about this program and kill it off.
Yeah, but, I mean, would your own father do that to you?
Seems like this guy would.
Maybe, yeah. That's what I wasn't sure if it was just a coincidence that he was in town and wanted to see Joe. I don't know what kind of vibe Joe got from him. Maybe that's the vibe Joe got when he looked in the window and he just decided he couldn't risk it with the company. I don't know.
Well, he tells Cameron that Joe plays people. And just like Hunt, this guy's just like Hunt and Gordon. This guy creeps me out now. He's like up to something.
Well, yeah, because why would you do that against your own son to a perfect stranger? But she absolutely catches it. She sees him and knows him for what he is as soon as he starts doing
this. This is more evidence of Cameron's genius that's like not related to computers. It's like related to people and personalities.
Yeah.
She does. She sees right through it. She sees magically behind his facade and sees his motivation. His true motivation is not what he's presenting it to be.
And she calls him on it quickly, and I love that. I love that she does that, because normally I can't find a whole lot about Cameron to just love, but that was great.
So then we see Donna play the keyboard for kind of her, what, resolution of conflict or finding a little peace in her mad world. Just goes out to the garage and plays the keyboard.
Yeah.
We haven't seen her play music before this scene, I don't think.
No, I don't think
she's going to go on the trip with Hunt and play the piano, but she hasn't done it yet. And she kind of plays the keyboard, and pretty cool, pretty she's pretty good at it and plays a cool little thing on the keyboard. All right, so the Japanese are leaving now the next day, the next morning. Joe storms up in his Porsche and apologizes. And ironically, he needs his father. He needs to reference his father as the motivator who taught him like how to respect heritage and parenthood, and his father that he just refused to see.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of understand that and accept his apology. And then as that happens, or right after that happens, Joe Sr. leaves the same place, right? Same hotel as the Japanese.
Yeah. Yep.
And the guy rushes after. He's been reading that magazine about the Cardiff article, and the bellhop rushes after him. Hey, you forgot your magazine. And he just says, I'm done with that. And I think that means Joe. I'm done with that. Done with Joe.
Yeah.
Pretty interesting. It was a really cool way that they tied up all these disparate ends of the story into one nice little bow.
I agree.
So Cameron comes back to work, and she's all full of vim and vinegar, and she fires her boss. That's got to be a good feeling. You can walk up to a boss you hate and just fire him.
And what's so funny was his reaction. He was hanging a poster up on the wall, and he jumps down, and he goes chasing after her. I mean, what would you do in a situation if a subordinate fired you?
I don't know what I'd do. That's kind of an unexpected thing to happen.
Yeah, but I don't imagine. I mean, he seems scared.
Yeah, you can't do that. I'm your boss.
Right.
Like, you don't have to say that out loud to somebody. You don't have to remind somebody of that verbally. It's just true. It's either true or not true.
Right. And it's
kind of like
not
it's kind of like Tywin telling Joffrey, the real king doesn't have to tell people he's the king.
Right.
Anyway, that was kind of funny. So then she picks the cheats and the rebels to keep their jobs out of all the coders. And everyone else is fired.
And that was brilliant.
Yeah, if you follow directions, you're one type of person. And if you figure out the code, you're the other type of person.
Right.
And I want the people that figured out the code.
And if you're willing to do whatever it takes to get to the end, then that's who I want. And that's the people she picked.
So we have to think that Joe set this whole little scenario up. Put a bunch of smart coders in a room, let the genius of them all see if she'll rise up to take the challenge, and then when she does take the challenge, let her pick the best of the best.
Yep.
Had to be that way. I mean, it was certainly presented that way. And it was believable. I believed it, and I liked watching it happen.
I did too. I mean, it was half the people, so half the cost, and in half the time, she's going to get it done with these people behind her. So it was perfect.
So now Gordon celebrates with his engineering team, and they all toast him for being a great manager. And now these are the same guys who later are going to leave him with the Gordon company that we see in season two. But they're elevating him now to this superstar status.
Well, Gordon's a lot of things, but he is not a great manager. I mean, he does get some stuff done, but...
The one thing that Joe does in this episode that is not a good managerial thing is what he does right here. He comes in and he asks for public thanks in front of everybody, and he embarrasses Gordon right in front of everybody.
Right.
So what do you think, Michelle? Because they kind of present it this way, that Either Gordon went back and begged his father-in-law to get the Japanese to forgive him, or Joe went back and talked to them and gave him that analogy with his father and how he knew how to respect heritage. Which one do you think it was that really convinced the Japanese to come back?
You know, I really got the feeling, well, they would almost have to do it if Gordon's father-in-law asked them to do it, because they've got that business relationship with him, so it might be like a favor kind of thing. But when they came out of the hotel and Joe pulled up and he was talking to them, the looks on their faces changed as you watch that. It really seemed like Joe had... If he didn't get them to change their mind, if their mind was already changed, he at least got them to be happy that they were going to be working, feeling good about it again.
He at least brought it back to neutral, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was Joe. I don't think Mr. Clark was going to do any favors for Gordon after insulting him about the golf game, drunkenly stumbling up to the house. He thinks he's a loser for his daughter. I just don't see him doing many favors for this guy.
Yeah.
He did one favor that was totally unappreciated and wasted when Gordon blew it, and then he needs another favor right away. Just, I don't see him doing that third favor. So I think it was Joe. All right, now so Joe accuses Cameron of taking things from the apartment, and I guess the one thing is the magazine article. He needs that for something. But she tells him it was his dad. His dad was at the apartment.
And that kind of shakes him up a little bit.
Yeah. So, yeah, his dad getting all the way into Joe's apartment had some meaning that was pretty mysterious. I mean, I guess I'll believe it's he's the cloaked assassin from IBM, because I don't have any other thing. I don't think it even gets resolved all the way through season two, which we've seen.
Yeah, I don't think so. Mm-mm.
But that kind of ends that. So they go, there's some all-American party. Now, this party looked very Texas, Michelle. Music, living in the USA, barbecue, everybody outdoors, smiling in the sunshine.
Yep.
And one of the events at the party is this slam a 1983 Datsun with a sledgehammer for $5 a swing.
Yep.
So everybody's lined up to do that. And Joe walks up and peels off 100. And unlike me, by the way, I don't keep the big bills on the outside like Joe did. You and I have talked about this, I think, on West Coast Project before, haven't we?
Uh-huh.
He peels off 100, and then underneath it's like a 5. You got to keep the bigger bills on the inside.
I didn't notice what was underneath it, but...
It wasn't another 100. It wasn't like a wad of hundreds. It was like lesser.
No, you definitely have to keep your small bills on the outside. I agree.
Well, maybe Joe's right. Maybe you have the appearance of having a wad of hundreds. You walk around like a hotshot.
Well, maybe.
But he's recovered his swing. He swings that sledgehammer like there's no pain in his ribs or anything.
Okay, so tell me, though, why did he do that? Was he venting frustration, or was he showing off for Cameron? Because it seemed a little show-off. He glances at her before he does it.
I don't know. This is a very symbolic scene. The Datsun is a Japanese car invading the American market at that point in time in 1983. A pretty crappy little car. Of course, Datsun and Nissan now are fabulous manufacturers. Datsun became Nissan, or always was Nissan or whatever. But back then, they were just a shitty little American car. And it was like we're pounding the invader. The Japanese invader has been overcome, and we made ourselves victorious over the Japanese invader. That's the symbolism I got. Anything of Cameron becoming turned on by it seemed to be a side effect of it.
I guess, but he keeps looking at her.
Yeah.
He like raises it above his head and glances at her and then brings this.
Yeah, and she's impressed with it. She's kind of slyly smiling.
Yeah, she's a little scared, she's a little leery, and she's impressed, yeah.
And that was the end of this episode, so I don't know if there were any other messages, but it seemed like we've forged this whole thing into the way that we're going to need it to be. Now we got the Japanese product as our screen, we've overcome people, Gordon's a little bit out of whack here, but everyone else seems to have set a path of direction for a way that they need to go. Cameron's got her team. Bosworth's kind of accepted where he is. Joe and him have seemed to have resolved their differences. I don't know. I think it seems like everybody's set up except for Gordon.
And Donna. Donna's just like along for the ride, I think, at this point, and struggling.
Maybe, but I think she's even kind of set up. Like, I've made this decision. I'm not going to put up with the shit with Gordon. She shuts him off on that call. And I'm going to go on the business trip. Or at least I'm going to get the reports right. I don't know if we know about the business trip yet. But her career, she's going to take care of her career. I think she's decided that.
I hope so.
All right. Well, that was it for adventure. Michelle from Tennessee, how do people reach you if they need to say something on the internet to you?
On Twitter, I'm at Michelle from TN.
All right, and I'm at Scathing Tweets, and this is West Coast Project, and this is our feed for Halt and Catch Fire. We're doing recaps of Season 1, and this was 105 Adventure. Next week, Michelle, or next time, we'll probably do it quicker than a week, is Landfall 106.
Yep.
So until then, we'll see you on West Coast Project.
See you there.